My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of GWatch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today. I am so pleased to welcome you to another session of The World Today. We meet here several times a week to discuss the many happenings around the world that are caused in a large part by the Jewish hegemony, which is accomplished through international banking, through the manipulation of national currencies in many nations around the world, and the Jewish control of media and of governments. Now, I know that some of you are ready to hide yourself behind the American or the British flag or whatever nation that you live in and say, oh, I don't want to listen to this. This might be radical. Well, there's nothing more radical than World War I and World War II. And yet, in many ways, those wars were started by the Jewish supremacists who were able to coax governments around the world to enter that war. And as a result, there was a lot of profiteering by the Jewish-owned weapons manufacturing companies, by the banks that loaned money for the wars to the governments to which they were associated. And then we had in the Soviet Union, in Russia, the beginning of communism, which was a totally Jewish development because the socialists and communists were almost all Jewish. In fact, out of the approximately 556 important functionaries of the Soviet Union in its first year, 476 of them were Jewish, and only 17 of them were Russian. So you can see that communism itself and the development of communism in Russia was a purely Jewish affair and was probably one of the worst things that ever happened to this world. And it was a result of the Jewish desire for world supremacy, for control, for the ability to enter themselves into the fabric of countries where the majority was 50 times larger than the Jews themselves, and to have their way with them, and in many times to kill them, as was done in the Soviet Union, including Byelorussia, the Ukraine, Estonia, and all of the other little duchies that the Soviet Union controlled and ruled with an iron rod. It was a Jewish rule, and it was a very brutal rule, and it was very similar to the Jewish rule that's going on today in the terror state of Israel. And please do not think that I'm anti-Semitic, because I'm honestly discussing Jewish supremacy and how it pertains to all of us here in this world. For we live in a world that is a colony of the Jewish banking system, where all nations, as I said before, are ruled by those who control our currencies, and the ones who have the right to print that currency, which in almost all cases around the world are our Jewish brothers and sisters. You have to ask yourself, if everything is equal, then why don't the Gentiles get to print the money also? Well, if the Gentiles printed the money, the Jewish people wouldn't be able to rule the world. And it's just as simple as that. It's a system based on inequity and on Jewish supremacism. And you, if you're a Gentile, well, you just don't measure up to the tribe. But that's okay, because you don't have to learn to live with it. And once you learn what's happening, you can figure out ways to free yourself of the oppression that soon you will be feeling after listening to the following news stories and comments. The first story I have chosen for our discussion has to do with Israel, which is right in the mouth of the dragon. Israel has threatened to block voting in the occupied city of Jerusalem in protest to Hamas participation in the January 25th polls that are coming up. And Dateline occupied Jerusalem, we read in the Palestinian Chronicle that Israel has finally approved a resolution allowing Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem to vote in the Palestinian legislative elections. But guess what? Israel has also banned Hamas from listing its candidates on ballots in the Holy City. This development has drawn immediate rebuke from the Palestinian Authority and the resistance group Hamas itself. The government approved the decision unanimously after U.S. pressure to lift, in the interest of Palestinian democracy, opposition to voting in the occupied Holy City. The United States has said that it believed that the Palestinians should be allowed to vote everywhere, not just in certain sections, where the outcome might be more favorable to the Zionist occupation of Palestine itself. The Israeli government said it would bar the distribution of ballot slips and campaign posters belonging to candidates of the resistance group Hamas in the occupied city. Under no circumstances will we permit Hamas to enter Jerusalem and carry out electioneering, the acting prime minister said. In less than an hour after the cabinet meeting, Israeli occupation forces arrested six Hamas members, including three candidates running for office in the Holy City, as was reported by the agency France Press. Among the three candidates was Sheikh Mohammed Abu Tir, who is number two on the list of Hamas candidates. And Hamas, which is putting up candidates for parliament for the first time, has been expected to make major inroads in the Palestinian parliament in the elections. So here we have the great democracy of Israel, which is put forth by America, by England, by Germany, by everybody in Europe as a proud democracy, a country where anybody can vote, anybody can say what they want. What happens? As soon as it turns out that someone they don't like in the Palestinian sector is running for office, who might win, they say, well, you can't campaign here, you can't be on the ballot. You can vote, but you can't have any real participation in the outcome of the election by speaking to your people, by any means whatsoever. We, as the Israeli Authority, are going to make sure that your candidacy has absolutely no expression. And I ask you, what kind of a democracy is that? And what type of people would pretend to be a democracy and yet deny other persons within their realm? And unfortunately, the Palestinian East Jerusalem is within their realm at this present time. Would make these people within their realm kowtow to a central government's opinion of who should be allowed to run. It's not like they're being discounted because they're too young to vote. It's because they have policies which do not suit the policies of the state of Israel. And in particular, they do not particularly believe that the state of Israel should exist in Palestinian territory. And they most likely agree more with the Iranian president that the Jewish colony of Israel, as it's called, is really not an Arab problem, but is a problem that should be handled by Europe. And I'm sure that the Palestinians would agree that the Israelis should leave, go back to Europe where they came from, and start a country there, somewhere in parts of Germany, France, and the Netherlands, because it's really not a problem that the Arabs should be associated with. And according to the Arabs, the Jews were only moved to Israel because they'd caused such problems in Europe with communism, which was their very bailiwick, which started tremendous upheavals on the continent. And so the people on the continent wanted them out. But as the Arabs say, is it right that they should be here? And I think what we should ask is it right for these people, once they're there, to tell the native population of Palestinians in East Jerusalem that they can't run their own party, Hamas? In my opinion, it's absurd for a democracy to say that people within their realm can only vote for approved parties. That's not a democracy, that's a dictatorship. In the United Kingdom, this is day one, the first day of a free speech trial, which is getting underway in Leeds, in Great Britain, with a tough-talking judge warning anti-British National Party protesters, and a tremendous show of support for the two defendants, Nick Griffin and Mark Collett, under attack by the government simply because of their views, their political views, their views as expressed to their constituents. Contrary to the lies that have been put out by the BBC, about 300 pro-free speech supporters from the BNP, Civil Liberty and Christian Council of Britain held a peaceful and orderly demonstration outside the Leeds Crown Court. A short prayer service was conducted by a representative of the Christian Council of Britain, a newly formed association of committed Christians from all denominations, and hymns were sung throughout the day in support of those who are being oppressed by the government, or who they feel to be suppressed by the government. And is it not suppression or oppression by a government when people who are speaking to their own constituents are arrested, manhandled, and taken to court? Proceedings got off to a slow start with a jury of 5 ladies and 7 gentlemen being sworn in during the afternoon, and the judge, Judge Norman Jones, warning the jurors to approach the proceedings in a fair and unbiased way. But I have to ask myself, in thinking about this story and its development, that just how unbiased is it for a government to prosecute a citizen for thought crimes? And that's what we're talking about here. This trial has created global interest that's way beyond the immediate BNP circles. And mountains of mail continue to arrive at the Treasury office in Britain, and messages pour in to the inboxes of the internet team from people across the political spectrum. Serious thinkers of all political parties and persuasions have realized that free speech is on trial in Britain right now, in this court. Demonstrating their utter contempt for the English legal system, members of the ragtag Unite Against Fascism, which is a collection of students, full-time diversity officers, and trade union officials, handed out to potential jurors entering the courthouse words bearing "guilty as charged." This appalling behavior, designed to influence jurors, earned a stern reprimand from Judge Jones, who said that this could be seen as an attempt to undermine the British justice system and urged them to stop. The trial is expected to last a full 2 weeks. And so goes it in Britain, which is a perfect stooge for the Jewish supremacists. And what did they say that was so bad? We're not really sure, but we think that it had something to do with race. But not just with race, but with immigration, which has changed the racial and cultural flavor of England and has caused a lot of hurt on both sides. And when you think about it logically, who is England to change the racial and cultural character of a nation and then to tell the people there that they can't discuss what they are doing in terms of that change? It seems that England is rapidly becoming like Yugoslavia, and with the chaos that's being caused by the injection of people who are not necessarily wanted by the British themselves, the government is beginning to step up and to increase its central power, become like Marshal Tito, looking down on the people and saying, "Well, because you can't get along, we are now going to have to take away your freedoms and put our boot on your throat to make sure that you get along." And that way goes the end of a once great democracy. The United States has just endured another rather boring Martin Luther King Day, in which the Jewish-owned media, the Zionist media, has done a lot of hand-wringing and has used that opportunity everywhere they can to show white people just how terrible they've been to the black man. But when we look at Martin Luther King, we find a collection of facts that are very confusing. For instance, his name wasn't really Martin Luther King, but was changed. Until adulthood, Martin Luther King Jr. was known as ML or Michael. When in college, Martin Luther King plagiarized his thesis, and the Journal of American History said that plagiarism was a general pattern evident in nearly all of Mr. King's academic writings, including his doctoral dissertation. He even plagiarized his famous "I Have a Dream" speech, and critics have charged that King plagiarized that speech by borrowing from a speech given to the Republican Convention in 1952, by an African-American preacher named Archibald Carey, Jr. Some of them say he gave Carey's speech word for word. It can probably be said that both men spun the remarks off the words of the song, "My Country, 'Tis of Thee." King's speech ended with, This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with a new meaning, "My country 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty." And it goes on and on with the words of the song. King said, when we let freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last. And we see herein the divisiveness of the civil rights movement, constantly separating people. Mr. King said in his speech, Jews and Gentiles, in other words, Jews versus Gentiles, Jews and Gentiles, separating them. Protestants and Catholics, again, separation. Black and white, separation, and playing upon that separation, as though there is something wrong with being separate, when in fact there is not. King himself was under surveillance because of his ties to many communist organizations. David Garrow, the author of Bearing the Cross, a book about Martin Luther King, says that King's criticism of the Kennedy administration drew its scrutiny. There were suspicion by two of his associates, including Stanley Levinson, a Jew who had disassociated from the Communist Party as a cover to work with and influence King. Another little-known fact was that King had an obsession with white prostitutes and that he used church funds for drunken parties. Yet none of these things were reported in the Jewish presses of the United States of America. Why not? Because the Zionists and the left-wing communists who run the presses, all of whom are Jewish, wish to promote diversity, integration, emigration, and miscegenation. Anything that will destroy the power of the white Europeans, who are the vast majority of this country. And why is this? It is because the Jews hate the white people of this world. France has stood up to Israel and rejected its action demand on Iran. Unlike the United States, France, which is sometimes called effeminate, seems to have the masculine fortitude to stand up against the pressures of the world banking and of Israel itself. France, in doing this, has proven that it is a true nation that somewhat represents at least part of its population, the majority part, by rejecting this tiny 1% of the population who are Jewish Zionists. France also, of course, has to deal with the large number of Arabs that are now living in its country, who hate the Jews themselves with a passion. And of course, since the Jews and the Arabs both hate the French, well, they seem to have a real problem. The problem they have is only partly of their own making. Because the emigration of Arabs into France was first occasioned by Jews, who wanted to destroy that European country by mixing more and more Africans and Arabs into the mix, thus destroying the European people and making it easier to control them. Now, as though there isn't enough chaos in our world already, much of it brought about by the Jewish hegemony and the Jewish supremacists, suddenly we find that bird flu may have entered Jerusalem. But then all of a sudden, after everything started getting hot there, the bird flu was ruled out. There was a man being treated at Hadassah Hospital, a man who owns chickens which have died in the last few days. The H5N1 strain of the virus, known as bird flu, has killed more than 70 people worldwide, and some of the cases have arisen in Turkey, which is very close to where Palestine or Israel is located. The Palestinian man is being treated in the same hospital where Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has been in a coma since the 4th of January. I don't think that we can rejoice yet in thinking that the avian flu has not infested part of Israel. None of the countries that have so far found the avian flu within their borders has been forthcoming immediately as to what is going on within those areas. To be honest, nobody wants to visit a country where avian flu is in progress, because avian flu is very, very fatal. And the tourist trade, if nothing else, will be destroyed, and Israel depends greatly and heavily upon billions and billions of dollars which it earns from the tourist trade by those coming to the holy cities. In addition, billions are lost in poultry farming. There was a very, very troubling story this week, and it concerns the intensity of Zionist influence in compromised Pakistan. In fact, at a dinner hosted by American Jewish Congress, Senator Tom Lantos said the Congress had noted something very, very dangerous to note, that Musharraf was a man of vision and an indispensable leader who has emerged as the quintessential Muslim leader of moderation, decency, reason, and acceptance of pluralism. So there you have it. Thomas Lantos, a Zionist, saying that the president of Pakistan, which is now America's puppet, has been a quintessential Muslim leader of moderation, meaning that he will work with the Jewish supremacists, decency, which means he will not talk against the Holocaust, reason, in other words, he will bend to the reason of the United States, having total control over his government, and acceptance of pluralism. Why pluralism? Because that is the Zionist goal, that the entire world would become pluralistic, so that just like the Jews, they will not themselves have any majority in which to oppose what the Jewish bankers want them to do. They will be emasculated, as is happening here in the United States, in Europe, and the rest of the world, under the Jewish hegemony. Now, earlier, Musharraf was given a standing ovation and a big round of applause as he stepped into the conference room for the dinner meeting with these leaders of the American Jewish Congress. And to imagine an Arab leader, imagine this, a Pakistani who's a Muslim, going to speak before the American Jewish Congress. Now, how much more obvious can it be that he has fallen victim to the Jewish hegemony and to the Zionists of this world? And how naive of the general, who was the president of Pakistan, who pretended as if he could not understand the reason behind these glowing tributes and comments, such as, his decision to be with us tonight is an act of individual courage, leadership, and vision. In fact, all Muslim opportunists realize the importance of the Zionist influence on American political leaders, and how Americans wish to please their masters in Washington. And now, Muslim leaders and opportunists such as Musharraf have resorted to making themselves just as acceptable to the Jewish lobby in the U.S. as the United States has done. And these opportunists, like Musharraf, understand each other's motives very well. For instance, Hussein Haqqani, a fellow at the Washington-based Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, has been mingling with Zionist organizations since his arrival in the United States. This turncoat Muslim has been lecturing the board of directors of the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs for quite some time on the same themes as Musharraf did lately. It makes you wonder how much money the Jews have had to pay these people in order to turn away from their own religion in favor of the great infidel which has come to Israel and destroyed occupied Palestine. Both the military and civilian moderate Arabs believe that Israel is a reality, and it might be in Pakistan's interest and the interest of other countries to overcome ideology and to recognize reality. In other words, to give in, to betray their own people for money, for influence, for power, to be able to prance upon the world stage, even if it destroys much of their religious idealism. Iran has been facing a lot of tension recently, especially concerning its nuclear power projects. The Europeans are putting a lot of pressure on Iran to stop producing uranium and to let the UN inspectors come into their country and to inspect what they're doing again. And so it comes as no surprise that Iran wants to somehow appear to be somewhat cooperative while not cooperating. And so the Iranian president has asked that a ban on CNN journalists in Iran be lifted and that the network be allowed again to continue working in the country. The reason that CNN was banned in the first place was that CNN was lying about the nuclear program of Iran, and that according to the Iranians themselves. As the president was speaking, an interpreter working for a translation company hired by CNN had misquoted him as having said that Iran has the right to build nuclear weapons. In fact, what the president of Iran had said was that Iran has the right to nuclear energy, and that a nation that has civilization does not need nuclear weapons. And the president had added, our nation does not need them. And so the error had caused Iran to withdraw from CNN the right to come to Iran and report. And now that is going to be lifted. It will be interesting to see what CNN does. Will it kowtow to the Iranians? Will it be timid in what it reports? CNN made a name for itself during the first war against Iraq, being the only journalism company that was able to report live when the United States was bombing Baghdad. And to be cut out of Iran is very, very disappointing for a company with that type of a tradition in the Middle East. We'll have to stay tuned and see what happens. The United States has evidently decided to join the ragtag group of nations who claim to be a democracy but who wish to deny democracy to others. And so the United States has threatened to withdraw its aid to Palestine and to the Palestinian front if Hamas is successful in winning in the upcoming elections. Condoleezza Rice has been called forward to get into the act. And in Monrovia, she warned the Palestinians that inclusion of the militant group Hamas in any new government could affect U.S.-backed efforts to establish an independent Palestinian state. She stopped short of threatening a cut in U.S. aid, although it was intimated that such might happen, if the Palestinians form a government with ministers from the hardline Islamic movement after the parliamentary polls. Instead, she said, let's just see what happens after the elections. She said that Palestinian statehood was a two-way street, and that after the elections, the ability of the Palestinians to engage the Israelis to move forward on the roadmap is obviously going to be dependent on having people in the governing structures who believe in the principles of the roadmap. In order to negotiate with a party, Ms. Rice said, you have to believe in its right to exist. In order to have the freedom of movement and access and peaceful development, you have to believe that violence is not acceptable. Israel and its client state, America, has opposed any electoral role for Hamas, which refuses to recognize the Jewish state's right to exist and has been responsible for the bulk of attacks on Israelis since their latest conflict broke out in September 2000. And, of course, these newspaper reports are always too happy to remind you that the Israelis are always right and that the Palestinians are always wrong. Isn't it funny how that happens? It couldn't be that the newspapers, being owned by Zionists, want to take care of their own and to damage those who oppose them, would it? Of course not. That could never happen. Races come in all sizes, flavors, colors, and religions. And the Jews have been very, very racist from the very beginning. In fact, their God was a racist who claimed that the Jews were his chosen people and all others were, well, just sort of out to lunch. So now we have a story, again in Israel, the center of world chaos at this moment, where a slain minister's son wants to ban terrorists from the vote in revenge. Paul Mokhzivi, the son of the murdered right-wing politician, said, "Don't let my father's killers get elected in Jerusalem." And Zivi, along with two other Brie families, is set to petition the High Court of Justice to request the residents of East Jerusalem be prohibited from casting their ballots in support of terror groups in the upcoming Palestinian Authority elections. He's going to be joined in his appeal, evidently, by the family of Ella Aboukis, who was killed by a Qassam rocket in Sderot, and the family of Aliyah Chin, who was murdered during a shooting attack in the West Bank. Well, I would like to ask if maybe the Israelis themselves should be restricted from any participation in their elections, since they have bulldozed down thousands of Palestinian homes and even murdered a young American activist who stood in front of a tank, not really a tank, but a bulldozer, and was simply run over. Her life ended and destroyed by a thoughtless Israeli thug, a terrorist. There is more terror coming from Israel than there ever was from the Palestinians. Because for every Palestinian killed, there has been 4 to 8 Israelis killed in each incident. Just because we have a Zionist news media that is a monopoly does not mean that we have to believe everything that they say. They have been pouring this filthy, vile poison in our ears for over 100 years, and we have to make an end of it. We have to take from them these particular newspapers, TV properties, etc., and give them to ourselves. If it means we buy them from them, then we must buy those properties from them. And if they don't wish to sell, then I suppose we're going to have to take them. Because our freedom is too important to allow people who are not like us and who hate us and are against us to destroy us by controlling what we see, hear, and think through the media properties of the Jewish Zionists in America. If we do not bring that to an end, we will never be able to read the true news, but only the news as a filter through the Jewish lens, which is news that is not going to save us from the tragedies ahead in the future. Tragedies brought about, no doubt, by the terror state of Israel. And now, once again, as usual, from Chaos Central, in the heart of the devil itself in Israel, the editors of Jew Watch have found this rather improbable story that a campaign tour by the Independent Palestinian Coalition in Hebron's Old City, which is a tourist attraction, was brought to a forcible close when Israeli soldiers refused to allow Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, head of the coalition, and other independent Palestinian candidates and council members and supporters from entering that part of the old city adjacent to the Ibrahimi Mosque where they were intending to preach and to worship. These candidates had completed Friday's prayers and were attempting to reach scores of Palestinians living trapped between illegal Israeli settlements and Israeli military checkpoints and Israeli walls when they were stopped by the Israeli army. The cleric attempted to negotiate with and engage soldiers in dialogue to facilitate the group's passage, but to no avail. Soldiers manhandled the candidates and forcibly separated and escorted the group from the area. In a press conference, the cleric warned that denying freedom of movement to both candidates and voters posed a serious risk to the ability to carry out free and fair elections. And he stated that such measures represented Israeli interference in the legislative elections process, and that in wider terms they constituted an attempt by Israel to hinder the democratic process in Palestine. To show you how serious this is, and it is a very serious accusation, just simply ask yourself what would happen if, during elections in Iraq or Iran, if the United States had decided that certain parties could not participate. You would have heard a huge hue and cry in Europe and in Russia and China and elsewhere about the undemocratic nature of the United States of America and how it was trying to manipulate the will of the people because it knew that the will of the people was for the United States to get out of Iraq. And such would probably be the case. In fact, the United States did manipulate the elections of Iraq, making sure that the elections basically went the way the United States wanted. And of course, no one has really been elected yet in Iraq because there is no parliament. There's nothing to show for 3 years of occupation of that country. And there's very little to show except terror for the 100 years of occupation of the Jews in the mandate known as Palestine, which is now occupied Palestine, and which is now a colony of Europe, of this little European tribe of Jewry that caused all of the trouble of communism in Western Europe and in Russia, killing millions and millions of Europeans until they were finally flushed from Europe to the United States and to Israel, where they really don't belong in either one of these countries. I'm not sure where they belong, but considering their actions and their murderous activities everywhere they have been in the 20th century, whoever takes them is going to experience an extreme amount of danger, and no company will want to expose itself to what might happen to them. Although the United States seems to be quite willing to allow the Jewish supremacists to take control of its federal government and to utilize its military for Israel's terrorist needs in the state of Iraq. Not that it would ever work. The United States is bogged down. It's being pecked at by the Iraqi patriots. And the entire occupation proves the point that it is better to accomplish your goals by diplomacy than by reckless war. And this is a reckless war that was based on lies and innuendos and half-truths, especially the lie that Iraq was harboring weapons of mass destruction. But the only weapons of mass destruction are in the armaments of the United States of America, including its tens of thousands of hydrogen bombs, which have terrorized the world for decades. These weapons have been shared with Israel, which is said to have 200 to 400 atomic bombs, which most people believe were developed by the Israeli scientists, but which some in the know believe were stolen from the United States of America, where some of these weapons just happened to end up in Israeli hands. The weirder things get, the more natural they seem. And some of the settlers this week who rioted in the West Bank town of Hebron gave Israeli Defense Force soldiers the Nazi salute. Yes, the Nazi salute. Israelis giving their own soldiers the Nazi salute. And they've even wounded the troops who have been sent into their area. What is going on here? The government of Israel has angered the Arabs by placing settlers within their midst, and now, as they are withdrawing those settlers by agreements with the United States, in order to keep the money flowing into their coffers, they now have their own people who are settlers shooting at them, tossing knives at them, and giving them the Nazi salute. It's very difficult to be an Israeli these days. The entire nation seems to be thrown into even more chaos than usual because the Israelis are very resentful of having to, first of all, pay to put settlements into occupied areas where they probably didn't belong, but they did so in order to establish more and more territory so that they could take that territory away from the Arabs themselves and push them out of the country. Now that they have been withdrawn, the idea was that the Palestinians were going to be peaceful. But they haven't cooperated. They've been lobbing a few shells here and there at the Israelis. So the chaos continues. And thus it is in everything in the 20th century that has even been associated with the Jewish hegemony. very possible hate crime hoax has been played out in Canada, and a Jewish organization that monitors anti-Semitic activities in that nation said Friday that it suspects that a Russian group is behind a rash of swastikas that were spray-painted in a Jewish neighborhood of Montreal this week. And of course, keep in mind that Russian groups are basically bywords for Jews, because the Russians who come to Canada and the United States are, for the most part, Jewish Russians. And many of them are mafia Russians from the worst elements of the Russian society. B'nai B'rith Canada said that the swastikas were found at 7 locations in the Cote de Neige and Notre Dame de Grasse neighborhood, near a Jewish school and community center in the French-speaking financial and cultural capital of the province of Quebec. Two of these sites were spray-painted with the internet address of a Russian nationalist website, www.nso-corpus-info, a site that includes a photo of Adolf Hitler and quotes excerpts from his Mein Kampf autobiography. Although police have no suspects and there have been no eyewitnesses, the language of the site lends B'nai B'rith to suspect the Russian group is involved, which would be a first. But of course, we have to ask ourselves, is the internet site simply put there by the Mossad to entice people in Canada to believe that there's some sort of neo-Nazi threat to the Jews of that area, when in fact what we might have here is simply a fake site which is designed to coincide with the spray painting of swastikas within this Jewish community? The incidents, all of which occurred within two blocks of one another, mark a sharp increase in the number of incidents. Well, that really means nothing. Incidents which are within two blocks of each other really mean that only one or two people are probably involved. What is so striking about these so-called anti-Semitic incidents is how many of them are later found out to be hoaxes. And I suspect that many that are known to be hoaxes are pandered to, nonetheless, by a Jewish-owned press which wishes to spread its victimhood, its false and fake victimhood, around Canada, the United States, England, wherever they are printing. No one enjoys playing the victim more than the Jews do. Oy vey, look what has been done to us. We have swastikas here on our building. Of course, if someone really wanted to destroy a Jewish building, they would lob Molotov cocktails through the windows, create a huge fire, and destroy everything within the area. It would be very cheap and very simple, but this is not what is being done. And the fact that someone would spray paint a Russian site that has pictures of Adolf Hitler and a few quotes from Mein Kampf makes my Jew sniffer begin to sniff like a investigatory dog for the dogs themselves who have done this thing. And I think the dogs may very well be Jews themselves. And I think they are probably connected to the Mossad, although I would not be able to stake my life at this point on it. But I would guess if we just stay tuned, we might find that to be true. Although the truth of this may never surface, we may never find out. But if all anti-Semites are doing are bring swastikas on a few walls, then the Jews, I would have to say, are extremely safe. But the problem is, if the Jews are extremely safe, then B'nai B'rith is probably out of money, because its coffers are not going to be filled by Jews who are scared by such events, making them think, well, I guess I better send some money to B'nai B'rith or to the ADL in order to protect myself. Because let's face it, if there are no anti-Semitic incidents, then the institutions that say they are protecting the Jews will have to find some other line of work, because their coffers will be empty very shortly. They live on anti-Semitic incidents, and in my opinion, if they don't occur regularly, those organizations may very well go out of business or have to curtail their huge expense accounts. And in the past, there have been incidents of Jewish organizations promulgating fake hoaxes, most likely to fill those accounts. And this could very well be one of those. I have been writing and speaking about these institutions of higher hate for many, many years. There are many institutions of higher hate. We have the Anti-Defamation League, we have B'nai B'rith. Now, I realize that they like to consider themselves to be organizations of love and of humanity. But it was only reluctantly and only recently that the ADL began propagandizing people other than their own Jews. Today, on the other hand, they have grown into a kind of universal organization, which I call a higher hate organization. We have the higher educational organizations known as universities and colleges, and the ADL and B'nai B'rith have become a higher hate organization in that they not only speak to Jews about hate, but now they go around and speak to Christians, Muslims, whoever they can speak to. They found that there's a market here for this type of rhetoric. If a Jew can come forward from the ADL dressed in a suit with a six-figure salary, and fly into a city or a town and tell people that the Jews have been put upon by wild anti-Semites, this causes a big stir, and it makes the Jews in the area even more excited and more likely to pay money to these organizations. Because after all, they came to the community, they spoke to us. Well, let's face it, this is a part of marketing. Every organization goes locally to get their funds. That is how subscriptions are basically promulgated. It's by creating some sort of an event or exploiting an event so that people become energized within that area and become interested in the organization, and they open their wallet and they begin to pay. In the case of the ADL, I believe that for years the price of membership is $60. And I believe they have around $60 million a year to spend, although they lost about 12.5 of it, I understand, last year or this year, because they had to pay off an anti-defamation suit to a family in Denver whom they had defamed by calling them anti-Semites when in fact they proved that they were not. And the fact that the Anti-Defamation League lost that suit seems rather strange, since most of the courts are packed with Jewish people, because the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate, which passes on those who are nominated and demands that a lot of Jews be nominated, has packed the court with its own people, almost as though it wishes to rub its Jewish racism in the face of the subject Gentiles, who sit by with their mouths open and watch this display of hatred toward Gentiles. Because nothing's more hateful than packing a court with your own people when you're a measly little 2% of the country, when 98% of the country are being thereby misrepresented and harmed, and hurt very severely. At any rate, this packed Jewish court found that the ADL, yes, had committed defamation, and yes, they did have to pay $10.5 million, which evidently had grown to $12.5 million, because of, guess what? The Jewish interest rate. Isn't that divine justice? At any rate, this is one of the interesting things about hoaxes and about fundraising by Jewish organizations. Yes, sometimes they do things that are hoaxes. There was a communist by the name of Sol who was working for one of these organizations for many, many years, and at one point he was arrested for actually starting a race riot. He had evidently tried to arrange for people dressed in Nazi uniforms to show up so that he could have Jews show up across the street who would then begin to attack each other so that a race riot would break out. And he had to go to court for this. It turned out to be slightly embarrassing, but since the news media wouldn't cover much of it, it just kind of passed by the wayside. It's funny how that happens, isn't it? And of course it's proof positive that a media run by the Jews, in not reporting what the Jews have done, which is negative to Gentiles, is extremely hurtful and harmful to the Gentiles themselves. And 50 times more hurtful, since the Gentiles are 50 times the number of people that the Zionists who own the media are. propaganda war between Venezuela and the Zionists of this world. In a story about the President Chavez of Venezuela saying that there was a tribe that had killed Jesus and which exacts usury from people, and that things like that should be a part of the past and that they should be over with. Well, the war has continued to erupt, so that today Chavez finally stepped out and said that he rejected the anti-Semitic charge as propaganda. In Caracas, President Hugo Chavez rejected these charges by a leading Jewish rights group, which is known by the name of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. They had accused Chavez of anti-Semitism and demanded an apology because it said he had related the Jewish people to the killing of Jesus Christ and associated them with wealth. Well, did they not kill Jesus Christ? Is that not what happened 2,000 years ago, according to the Bible that Chavez has read? And are the Jews not the wealthiest people in the world per capita? I believe that they are. But I guess you're an anti-Semite if you mention the truth. Chavez is a socialist ally of Cuba and a fierce critic of what he brands as Washington's imperialist policies. Chavez did not mention the Jewish people in his December speech, and it also referred to the betrayal of Venezuelan liberation hero Simon Bolivar. "Anti-liberal I am," he said. "Anti-imperialist even more so, but anti-Semitic never, that's a lie. It's part of an imperialist campaign, I am sure." Well, the Jews are a part of an imperialist campaign. They are the imperial masters of the United States of America at this very moment. And all of our congressmen and senators and presidents worship at the feet of the Jewish lobby. In fact, they visit IPAC whenever they can so that they can increase their booty from the Jewish corruptors of our government. The Jews themselves have dual loyalties to the United States and to Israel, which is a terrorist state. And for our government officials to be associating with these terrorists of the Jewish sort and not associating with the terrorists of the Arab sort is rather ridiculous, especially when you consider that it was the Jews themselves who were following Al-Qaeda around the country at every airport where they were training, and it was five Jews that were dancing atop a building in New York while filming the destruction of the World Trade Tower. They were dancing and laughing and celebrating. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because they love America? Is it because they have a deep feeling of respect for our country as their ally? Or do you think not that perhaps it shows a bit of hatred? I think that's what it is. I think that it shows, yes, that it is a bit of hatred that they have for us. A lot of hatred and a lot of disrespect. And evidently a feeling that we are so stupid that we would allow people to dance around laughing when our citizens are being killed by Al-Qaeda, especially when we discover that the Jews themselves have been following Al-Qaeda around, speaking with them, listening in on them, knowing every bit of their conversations and not sharing that information with our government, so that our citizens are murdered in those buildings. Was it the Al-Qaeda that did it? I'm not sure. When I first heard that the buildings were coming down because of airplanes, I thought, the Mossad. And somehow or another, I am still convinced that the Mossad is heavily and deeply involved in the 9-1-1 destruction. Because you have to follow the money trail. You have to look, where does the money go after the buildings are destroyed? Does it go to Israel or does it go to the Arabs? Well, where the money is gone is to destroy the Arabs. Is that in the best interest of an Arab, or is that in the best interest of the Jews and of the Mossad? Well, that's pretty obvious. Obviously, it was to the detriment of the Arabs and for the good of the Israelis who hate the Arabs and who want them dead. And so that's what we're doing. We are carrying out what the Israelis wanted. And that being the case, you have to ask yourself, well, if that's true, isn't it true then that maybe the Mossad just might have had a reason for helping it to happen? Of course, asking such questions isn't going to help you. If you have a political career in mind, you can ask them if you keep the answers quiet and the questions quiet. It's like gays in the military. Don't ask, don't tell. Do you not like Israel? Do you mistrust the Mossad? Don't ask, don't tell. That is the secret of getting along in America, which is a Jewish-run affair. And if you don't like Israel, and if you don't like Jews, you need not apply. Because this country is basically bought and sold by the Jewish lobby. The late great Israeli historian and critic Israel Shehak wrote that when the Roman historian Tacitus pointed out 19 centuries ago that the Jews are unique among the races of man in their intense hatred and contempt for all races but their own, he was only repeating what many other scholars had discovered before him. For the next 1900 years, other investigators came to similar conclusions, either from a study of the Jews' religious writings or from a study of the Jews' behavior toward non-Jews. Notable among these people who questioned the right of Jews to be hateful toward Gentiles, and how they were hateful possibly toward Gentiles, was the great reformer Martin Luther, who in 1543 wrote in Van den Jordan and Eren Lugen, "Does not their Talmud say, and do not their rabbis write, that it is no sin to kill if a Jew kills a heathen, but it is a sin if he kills a brother in Israel? It is no sin if he does not keep his oath to a heathen. Therefore, to steal and rob, as they do with their usury, from a heathen is a divine service. For they hold, the Jews, that they cannot be too hard on Gentiles, nor sin against Gentiles, because they, the Jews, are of noble blood and circumcised saints. But the Gentiles, like us, however, are cursed goyim, and they are the masters of the world, and we are their servants, yea, their cattle." Should someone think that I, Martin Luther King, am saying too much, I am not saying too much, but much too little. For I see in their writings how the Jews curse us, goyim, and wish us all evil in their schools and in their prayers. The Jews responded to Luther like they responded to all the others who criticized them. The Jews put him down just as another hater, blinded by religious bigotry. And today that's still the Jews' standard answer to everyone who says or writes anything about them except the most favoring praise. And of course, they say the same thing about me. I discuss what they do. I simply report it and comment upon it. And so, of course, they call me a great, disgusting anti-Semite. But I say, no, it's the other way around. Israel is a great, disgusting terror state. And the bankers do exploit the Gentiles of this world with usury, with interest, and they unfairly are able to get their fingers on printed money, which is phony, fake money, at 0.5%, the 1%, it may be 1.5% if it's very inflationary at the time, but they'll turn around and sell that to you at either 5% or 6% per year, or up to 25% per year, and I say that is unequal treatment under the law. And they say, well, because we're Jews and we're the ones doing it, you are being an anti-Semite. Well, so I'm an anti-Semite, and I could care less if I'm an anti-Semite. As long as what I am speaking about is the truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God, I will continue to say it. And I care nothing about how you criticize me. Because you, by your own admission, are my enemy, the enemy of my people, the enemy of my government. You have sworn your hostility to me and my people. You have brought in immigrants to this country through the immigration laws in 1965 and 1985 that were promulgated by Jews. And I will name them once again, Jacob Javits, Emanuel Seller, and Frank Lautenberg. And that act alone is an act of hostility and a declaration of war upon the Gentiles of the United States of America, which must be met with an equal declaration of war against the Jews who have undermined our nation and who have acted as traitors against our majority people. Thank you very much for listening to The World Today. And please check again at JewWatch.com on a regular basis for continuing programs which will update you on the conspiracies and the news surrounding the Jewish supremacists of this world, who do not have good things intended for you in their minds. Unless, of course, you are Jewish like themselves. But if you are a Gentile, well, yeah, they're going to do bad things to you. And I want to wish you a very, very happy day. You have been listening to The World Today by the librarian of Jew Watch, Frank Weltner. I am Frank Weltner, and I want to invite you to return to JewWatch.com on a regular basis to study our news, our archives, our records, and our materials. JewWatch.com, because you care about the Jewish hegemony and the Jewish colonialism of our world and wish to do something about it.